Want to make a difference in your community but not sure how? Go to GoFundMe.com right now and start a GoFundMe. Seriously. Your next fundraiser doesn't have to start in a school parking lot or a church basement. You can start a GoFundMe today in just minutes. Fundraise for yourself, a friend, or family member, or an organization. All that matters is that you care about them. GoFundMe is the trusted place to fundraise for what you care about. With no pressure to hit your fundraising goal, but tons of tools to help you reach it, you can confidently start fundraising right now. Whether it's creative, local, or critical, your cause matters. And there's a reason why GoFundMe is backed by millions and chosen by fundraisers everywhere. It works, and it matters. GoFundMe helps you make a real difference. Start your GoFundMe today at GoFundMe.com. That's GoFundMe.com. GoFundMe.com. This is a commercial message brought to you by GoFundMe.
Welcome to Needle Exchange, where we explore the stories behind the stitches. I'm Jamie Chalmers, aka Mr. X Stitch, and today I'm interviewing Jack Roberts, aka JPR Stitch. This is the second part of our Needle Exchange, and this is the second time I've talked to Jack, and we get right into it today. We talk about the challenges and choices that every artist faces when putting work out into the world. We discuss audiences, recognition, and the line between creative process and admin, and why sharing isn't always about sales. Jack and I really nerd out about what it is to put pictures on walls and to curate exhibitions, and his reflections will also resonate with anyone who is balancing personal passion and public presence. Jack has got a show on at Brampton Museum in Newcastle Underline that is running until the end of 2025. I've been to see it myself. It's lovely to see his work up close. So if you're in the vicinity, South Cheshire, that kind of neck of the woods, be sure to go and have a look. You won't regret it. For another great interview with another great machine embroidery artist, dial all the way back to Needle Exchange 008, where I talked to the magnificent Meredith Warno. And if this episode speaks to you, please do a review on your favourite podcast. It makes a real difference. I will eventually learn how to say leave a review. I'll be back next week with somebody else from the world of Stitch. But until then, enjoy the show.
So, 2 years since we last did a podcast. Exhibitions are every now and again. Book, it's the first book I've ever made. Whereas social media has the benefit that it can be that drip, drip, drip on a daily basis. So it has multiple places. And I do think that there are a lot of artists out there who don't want to share their art. Sharing their art doesn't come naturally. And they don't feel that sharing their art is important. But for me as an artist, I do want people to see my art. I do want people to... I don't mind if they don't like it. That's okay. I'm making what I want to make, because that's my creative expression coming out, and take it or leave it. But the fact
they're wrong,
of course. But the fact that it's been seen, is giving me an opportunity to share my art with a wider audience.
And I think we talked about that the last time, isn't it? It's that balance of you've got to be able to market yourself and be willing to go against the tensions, the pulls and stuff. It's been interesting seeing quite a lot of people who are selling kits and stuff and tariffs taking effect and audiences suddenly being removed because of the reality of shipping internationally and all those sort of things. And just
And I think one thing that I'm looking at is that obviously that I've got lots of different audiences, and my biggest audience don't buy much. That I've got, 90,000 followers. I haven't sold a piece of art to those 90,000 people. And that's great. I don't mind that, because people take what they want. People are experiencing at different levels. There are some people who want to just see a photograph, see a video and think, I like that, that's nice. There's some people who might want to say, I like that, and I'll give it a like. There's some people who might want to say, I like that, and I'll engage, and I'll drop a comment. There are other people who might message me and start a dialogue. There are other people who might follow me and start watching what I'm doing on a regular basis. There are people who might buy some prints. There are people who might buy a book. And then there are some people who might decide to buy a piece of art. They're all everyone listening to this, they're all a part of an audience who take away different aspect. And as an artist, it's not that I'm just interested in the people who are buying. I'm interested in sharing my art with people, whatever they take away from it, whether they take a piece of art away as a purchase or whether they just take away of, that was a nice couple of minutes to watch somebody sewing in their garden. That was just quite a nice thing to spend a couple of seconds doing.
Mm.
That it's sharing nice stuff with the world.
Yeah. Yeah, your videos are annoyingly nice to watch as well.
And okay, there's a degree of vanity in that me wanting to share nice things with the world, but I think the world's can be
world needs nice things.
Pretty toxic and the more nice stuff the better. And
you have got great hair as well.
Thank you very much. It's tied up at the minute.
The other thing I wanted to talk about was the fact that so you're doing these daily stitches, and yeah. I know you, again, they're abstract, so they can be whatever, but it's interesting that you said after a while you noticed that some of them started to kind of reflect your mood.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered, when you cottoned on to that, and then did you do any like reverse analytics, look back at the days when you stitched and see what was going on?
And I've done it since, and I think to myself, like, I thought at one point, should I do like a key to almost so that other people could understand the flow of it? And then I'm thinking, no, I don't want that. And then I'm thinking, well, it'd be interesting to have like a discussion with a psychologist about this. And then I'm thinking, I don't think I want to have my life analysed in that way.
Yeah.
So yeah, I have. And it's interesting that I do look back. And when I first started, it was quite black and white. The stitchings were black and white, but it was quite black and white that if it was a smooth stitching, it was a calm, peaceful day. If it was spiky stitching and a bit more asymmetrical or a bit more all over the place, it was perhaps not as smooth or a calm day for me. Or I just and that's not particularly saying that there was anything going on, just how I was feeling, how I woke up that morning. Just kicked your toe up and you're thinking, oh, kick my toe up, and you're feeling a bit more edgy than you might have felt the day before. Now it's interesting that actually sometimes on the more stressful days the stitchings are quite smooth and calm, because I'm thinking my practice is about being calm. This is my opportunity to rebalance myself. So rather than it being just a record of how I'm feeling, sometimes some days it's actually, no, this is my moment to reset myself. So it started as unconsciously stitching my emotions, and is gradually moving into a way for me to reset my emotions if I'm not quite as where I want to be on that day.
Yeah, yeah, tapping into the mindful recovery option that you've got, which is the foundation of doing the daily practices.
Yeah, absolutely. And it took the recognition after a while to actually recognize this is my emotions that I'm stitching, to then be able to say, oh, perhaps then this I could use as a way to influence and control my emotions.
Mm. Yeah, I was thinking about, I did a podcast recently with Claire Vocal Siedemeyer, who she did a daily practice, but it was kind of like her style's more, not figurative, I don't know. Yours is abstract. Totally. So yours is just, it's just feeling. Yeah. Hers is a bit more grounded in reality. It might be reflections on what had gone on, but it was kind of like a daily documentary thing. And it was interesting, again, for her, I think, being able to reflect on what had gone on and the things you choose to bring to the fore. But I think, again, that thing of, as you say, you go, I'm going to start a daily practice. I'm going to, in her case, reflect on what's gone on in the day and take a moment of that, like a documentary. And with you, it's like a feeling-based documentary. But then also, like you say, at a certain point, you're like, oh, this is making me feel quite good now. And then I can use that as a tool for betterment.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it is interesting that I can look back at them and I can have a pretty good guess at how I was feeling on that day when I was stitching them.
Mm.
So it's I might not know now what happened on the 3rd of October last year. Mm. But if I look at the 3rd of October stitching, I could probably guess how I was feeling.
Mm. Yeah.
Which is interesting.
Yeah. So then you're on the brink of having an exhibition. Is the exhibition connected with the book?
Not really, no. It's coincides just from a timing point of view, really. The multiple things have come at a similar time. So the book came, I wanted to do a book at the end of my first year. It's taken a while to come into being, and it's kind of now ready, which is now it's being shared. And the exhibition is something that's been on the cards for a while, but museums programming is years in advance, so it's been on the cards for a while, but it's now coming to the time when the doors open.
And how are you feeling about it?
I'm feeling quite excited about it, actually.
Yeah.
So yeah, so it's a museum in Newcastle under Lyme in Staffordshire in the UK, and it's quite a nice place for me to go and do a kind of a first major exhibition, because I used to go to the museum as a child with my mum. It's in a parkland, so I used to go around the park a lot. When I was at university, I did some workshops there. So it feels quite a nice place to almost, I feel like I, although artistically, I don't particularly have a connection with the museum. It's a nice...
AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
This place personally to have an exhibition, because I do have a connection with a museum. But it's not just an exhibition about me. So the museum is in an old manor house, and they've got a beautiful white wall gallery, which is where my stuff's going. But in lots of other rooms, there's kind of a textile takeover throughout the whole exhibition, the whole museum. So there's my art, which is the kind of fine art, but then there's the museum curators and exhibition officers have done an exhibition about the textile industry of the local area and textile crafts that were produced by local people that are in the collection. So it's quite a nice insight into how people have engaged with textiles in different ways, whether that's people sat at home darning clothes, creating art, cross-stitching, knitting, or being involved in textiles from a fine art point of view, like me, or being involved from an industry point of view. So although it's kind of like there's lots of things going on, it's almost lots of different exhibitions going on at the same time. So it's a really nice story, and all of the things that are happening, because I've got a connection to the local area, the industry is about the industry from the local area, the crafts in the collection or people from the local area throughout history who've made stunk things that have been in the museum collection. So there's a really nice local connection, but also this kind of local connection that could be the same about anywhere, that people in so many places, there's industry related to textiles, there's craft, home craft, there's hobby, there's practicality of mending clothes, and there's artists working with textiles as a fine art form. So it's a kind of a story that, okay, it's using Newcastle under Lyme as a lens, but it's a story that could be replicated across the country or across the world. So yeah, it's a really nice exhibition. But so at the minute, so we're recording this late August, and the exhibition opens at the end of September. So it opens about a month away.
Right.
So I'm in the middle of kind of like final getting everything ready, getting stuff sorted. So it's been good to know that this has been on the horizon for a while. So it's been in the back of my mind thinking what artworks might go into it. And it'll be a nice opportunity for me to actually see some of my pieces together. So there'll be pieces that I've created a couple of years ago next to pieces I've created recently that perhaps have never been, that have never been displayed together. So it'll be interesting to see that dialogue between artworks that have been made by me at a different point that have never actually sat next to each other.
Yeah, it's an interesting challenge. Just go back to the thing you said a second ago. What's quite nice is you've got like your fine art, and then you've just got it grounded with the context, haven't you? You know, and I think that's always quite nice, because if it was just Because it's a lovely place, Brampton, isn't it? And they have like little exhibitions. There's a bit to do with like vintage toys and all that kind of stuff, isn't it? If yours was just there on its own, it might feel a little bit aloof.
Yeah.
It's quite nice that they've kind of married it.
Yeah, and this is, I've been working with the curator and the collections manager for a while to think about, well, what's the story? What do you want people to take away from the exhibition when they walk in? And it's kind of like it's talking about this engagement of how different people use textiles and how that has changed throughout time, but in some way stayed the same. Yes. That actually people at home were making samplers decades ago, hundreds of years ago, but still people now are doing embroideries at home as well. They might be different, but there's still that pastime going on. There's been industry that's changed. There's been people who've used textiles as fine art that's changed, and there is a growing movement of textiles being used as a fine art form. So it's an interesting story, but it's quite interesting. It's quite nice that it's rooted in the locality as well, that there is that local connection. But you could come from further afield, enjoy it just as much, because you can. There's the exhibition of my art. Who wouldn't enjoy that? But then the craft exhibition side of it could be craft art, craft pieces from anywhere.
But also what's quite neat, I think, is because your stuff's abstract, like that offers up a bunch of challenges in the interpretation of it. People coming to see it and being like, I wonder what this is all about.
Yeah.
But then the fact that they can almost like look back in time and see where it's come from to some extent, you know, I think that's probably a real help for people because it's almost like a bit of a warm up. If yours was in some stark white box and it was just those pieces, it would almost be too cool for school and people wouldn't know what to think.
Don't get it.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's a nice exhibition. And I like the fact that it's multiple exhibitions around a common theme so that there is the industry, the craft, the homemade and the fine art, that they're all standalone exhibitions, but they're all connected by the idea of connection to the local area and people from the local area engaging with thread, fabric, textiles in different ways.
Yeah. So next question, your work's really abstract. How, and I know in the past, like I've seen you grouping pieces together and sometimes you've made pieces that are deliberately like six parts of a whole, all that kind of stuff. How do you go around choosing what are the decisions? Because as you said, like I would have thought in some ways you could go, here's a no-brainer, I've got 365 pieces I can bang up on a wall, nice infographic, but like, so what's been the process? How have you got to where your exhibition is?
That's a good question. It's been an interesting, because I've got, there's a number of practices within my practice. So there's the daily stitch practice, and then there is my main colorful, abstract, bold embroideries. So it's, what do I want to show? What do I want to talk about? What do I want people to leave with? And I think the important thing for me is my art is about creating a sense of balance, creating a sense of calmness, creating tranquility. And it does that for me as I create. But I want people to feel that sense of tranquility and calmness and balance when they see the art. So that's been quite a core of thinking, well, what do I put into the exhibition? Are the pieces, so that an artwork on its own, I might think is balanced, but does it look balanced next to another piece? Does it clash? Does it create some form of a bit disjointed, or does it give that feel of calm, soft, warm creativity? And that feeling of balance. So there's been a lot of to-ing and fro-ing of placing artworks next to each other, placing artworks in groups, and feeling my way through it, and feeling that it's not just a timeline of everything's put in date order.
Yeah, that would be easy, wouldn't it? Yeah,
yeah, and that could be a story and maybe an exhibition at some point in the future, but it didn't feel that is what I wanted to talk about here. It's kind of like I wanted to talk about what my art is trying to achieve, which is to try to achieve the sense of calm and balance. So trying to get that flow within the exhibition. And people might not recognize that, but I hope that when they walk out of the room, they feel quite calm. So even if they don't realise that the point of the art is about creating a sense of calmness, if the room feels calm and as they exit, they feel calm, then it's achieved what I've wanted. So it's been an interesting one. So there's obviously like the subtle feeling of what you want people to leave with, as well as the practicalities of, well, does that red one look good next to that blue one? Two blue ones look better to the, and there's a line flowing through there. Do I want that line flowing into that next piece, or do I not want that line flowing into the next piece? So there's the practicalities of what do visually pieces look like together, as well as then that kind of emotion of what does this grouping, how does it make you feel?
Yeah, because it's interesting, because that was going to be like my next line of inquiry. It's like, I've put up exhibitions here. Like I said before, we had this exhibition from 15 schools. There were 270 pieces of artwork we had to put up on the wall, and I had to make the decisions on how we were going to do it. And it was interesting because you've got the content. So like, say, nursery kids, age 4, finger painting and all of those sorts of things. You've got that. And then how do you arrange that? And then how do you arrange the A-level work, which is a lot more considered? And for me, I went for a simple trick of going, the older the years are, the more formal things are arranged. So at a certain point, things are now arranged in columns.
Yeah.
And, you know, some of them could be grouped by schools because that was quite easy at a certain point. But like when you're putting together an exhibition, it does, like I was trying to explain this to some of the people that were helping me. You can't explain how to do it. But like for me, I can tell when things don't feel right when they're placed next to one another. And for me, though, it's quite easy because a lot of the time it's been, I mean, the exhibitions we've had here, we had a landscape painter, or not landscapes, but his paintings were like all the same medium, but the content was quite different. So it wasn't too hard to arrange them. I quite like pattern interrupts and things like that. So it was quite good to just give people so that one thing felt different to the next thing. That's quite an easy conceit. But then when you get a bunch of pictures that are all the same, then you think, how can I arrange them in a way that perhaps is a pattern interrupt or that feels quite right? But then I'm doing it with other people's work, so I don't have the feeling, let alone all of my pieces don't essentially look the same.
Yeah.
I take my hat off to you. I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Me too. I think I've done a lot of curating and in my past work within the art world. I've done a lot of things where I've curated other people's work.
Mm.
And it is so much easier to, I find, curate other people's work. And I'm finding this process of curating my art much harder because I'm so much more emotionally attached to it. And also I'm thinking like some of them, I've got emotions tied up in certain pieces. So I'm thinking, well, I'm creating this sense of balance. Well, that piece looks really balanced, but I know I didn't feel balanced when I was making it. So it's kind of like, it might look balanced and fit, but I'm thinking that one doesn't fit. But no one else would see that. No one else would know that. It's just for me that that artwork has a certain connotation that it feels like that doesn't fit within the flow somehow. So in some ways, it's great that I'm so close to it that I can feel the emotions of the pieces and try to build that into it. But then it makes it harder because you are so close.
Yeah. Like I'd be blind to that. I'd just be like, I like the colour of that. That can go.
Which actually makes it certainly an easier process.
Mm. But then when it comes to like arranging the things as well, like again, sorry, this is really boring to people who are, but I'm like nerding out about curation now. But you get certain things that are the same shape and there's an inclination that you have to arrange those within a certain structure. And then other times you're like, I don't really want that. I want things to be kind of higgledy-piggledy or random and that sort of thing. Like yours are largely rectangular, aren't they?
Yeah, rectangular, one of three sizes.
So are you going like straight lines all the time? Or
some
you,
of them.
Right.
So this is something that I've deliberated with as well. So I've got two within my main practice, my colourful, bright, heavy embroidered stitchings, there are two groups of stitchings. One, standalone individual artworks where it's a piece that's just a pattern that it doesn't relate to anything else. It's just a one-off piece. And then there are other ones which I call collection artworks where there are 9, 12 individual stitchings that come together with a pattern that flows between them, which are much bigger. Those ones I always display with a 1 centimeter gap between them.
Mm-hmm.
So that makes life easy that they're displayed with a 1 centimeter gap, so you get these white lines between them.
Mm-hmm.
Grid-like, quite like it. But then there's not an up or a down.
Right.
That they could go portrait, they could go landscape, they can go upside down, they could go angular if I wanted them to. And then the individual pieces, when I'm having groups of them, do I display them next to each other with a 1 centimeter gap? Or does that then confuse you that actually, what should I be seeing here? Should I be seeing a flowing pattern? Or do I display them a bit more randomly?
Mm.
Do I display them as a linear grid? Do I display them a bit more all over the place? So there are loads of different questions. It's a strange process because there's a lot that you can do before you get into the room to hang the exhibition. And then when you're in the room hanging the exhibition, it feels very different because you're in the different space, the light's different, the light's coming from different places, and you're seeing the vantage points that where people will come in, and things do change. So I've kind of come up with some plans, but there's enough, hopefully enough flexibility built into it so that when I get to install it, I can think, actually, no, that's not quite right there. It needs to be switched for another piece, or actually that piece there would be better as a landscape piece rather than a portrait piece.
Mm.
So there's a degree of flexibility through it all.
Because you run a risk, don't you, of like, you could have something that's really calm and you could look at all the pieces and they're really calm, and then you could really formally arrange them and make it really tense because everything's just in lines and stuff, isn't it? And
it's quite unnatural almost.
Yeah, I was trying to, there's a coffee shop near us that have got quite a few bits of art on the wall, and bless them, they're really good at making coffee, but they're not very good at putting things up on the wall in the first place. So I went in, we had like a little hour and a half session of me just trying to explain, like, we took the things off the wall and, you know, they'd have like four pieces by the same person next to each other. And I was like, let's not do that. Let's just mix it all up and have these little clusters and all of that sort of stuff. And I thought I was articulating it quite well. And then I left them to it and I came back and they'd done a pretty good job. But I was still like, oh, I haven't articulated this as well as I could, because they'd still kind of lump things together, and it's no shade on them whatsoever. Yeah. But it's quite... like, it's really hard to explain.
It is, and it's one of those things that is part of design throughout the world anyway, that you don't notice good design as much as you notice poor design.
Yeah.
Whether that's a park or streets or a building or an artwork or curation or layout of design on a leaflet that comes through your door.
Yeah.
That often, if it's well designed and well laid out and the colors balanced and it all works, you kind of just take the information away and you don't notice that curation. Whereas when it's not quite right somehow, being able to say, a lot of people could say there's something not quite right there, but being able to understand what it is and why it's not quite right, not the easiest sometimes. And it's trying to do that with the curation of the exhibition, just trying to feel your way through it to think, like, is this quite right? Does this feel right? Or when people come in, are they looking at the artworks, which is what I want them to look at, or are they looking at how it's displayed because it just doesn't feel quite right? So then the curation becomes the thing you look at rather than the curation helping to elevate the artwork.
Yeah, it's a real bugger. It was making me think of, like, I like comic books and the people that do the lettering in comic books, that's their whole entire job. Yeah. And if they do their job brilliantly, you don't even notice
them. You don't even know that they're doing that job.
Yeah,
absolutely. And you see that with a lot of curators and museums, that actually some of the best curated exhibitions, you wouldn't know that there's a curator done it because it looks perfect.
Yeah.
And you just think this feels so right that you just don't think that someone will have agonized for months about, well, do you put it slightly to the right 2 centimeters or up? Do you have a text label by it, or do you have a piece of printed paper? Do you not have any information at all?
Yeah.
All of these different questions. Do you light it? Do you not light it? What colour wall do you have?
Colour wall. What are your fixings things like? Yeah.
Do you have any lettering on the wall? There are so many questions. But when you walk into a museum, when you've not been involved in curation, if it's done well, you don't see any of these things.
It
just flows perfectly and works well as a good exhibition.
Did you ever go to, like, in your experience of being a curator, did you ever go to any places? Did you ever meet people who really helped unlock some of this stuff? Or did you ever, like I said before, I went to Salt's Mill and I was looking there, and And it was like, I was looking at the pictures, but I wasn't really looking at the pictures. I was looking at how they fixed the pictures and you know, noticing sometimes things were nailed on and sometimes things were fixed in certain ways to protect them against the public and stuff.
I think for me, it's not particularly someone who's changed it for me. I think what one thing that changed was from going to see exhibitions and then doing an exhibition. And then the first time I thought about curating a show of myself and not my own art, but curating a show, from then on, it's like you've unlocked a hidden door that then you're looking, you're going into a museum and you're thinking, how have they done that? Mm. How have they got the lighting sorted out? Or how are they managing the flow of people so that people generally walk into a room and turn left?
Yeah.
How is the exhibition curated to follow the flow of human nature? Because if you go in, I remember going into an exhibition, and you went in through the double doors and it was a big room, but they put false walls in to funnel you and you were funneled right. And I never really felt comfortable throughout the whole exhibition because it felt unnatural to go in and be funneled to the right.
Yeah.
Whereas if I'd have gone in and been funneled to the left, I can't even remember what the exhibition was.
Right.
But I can just remember going and feeling a little bit unnerved.
Yeah.
So it's things like that that it's, you want to make the exhibition feel as you want the experience of walking around a room filled with art to be as easy for people to experience the art and taking away any barriers that might put things in the way to experiencing them.
Mm.
And I don't mean just physical barriers, but barriers like that have been forced to go down a route that doesn't perhaps feel natural. Whereas if you can go in and turn left or right, for the people who might want to turn right, they can. For the people who might want to turn left, they can too. Mm. It's balancing things like that.
But then that might have been part of the plan. Like, you know, you could be going in some other world where it's like things are upside down and you're meant to feel uncomfortable. And
yeah, absolutely. And that might be the idea of some of the exhibitions, to make people feel uncomfortable, because that's what the exhibition's about.
Yeah.
And then you use some of these tricks of funneling people in certain ways and putting pieces next to each other that are a bit clash and to make people feel like that.
Mm-hmm. I remember being quite relieved. We went to see the Turner Prize nominees, I think it was, at like Tate Liverpool. Might have been 2 years ago, whatever. I was really relieved at the end because they told you what the paint colours were on the walls. It was almost like a bit of a corporate sponsorship or something. Yeah. But I was like, oh, that's really helpful because I really liked a couple of those colours.
That could be great in my life.
Yeah, honestly. So then the final question I think with this maybe is like, when do you decide what's good enough? You're putting your show on, you've got all these pieces in mind, there's going to be a difference between what is in your head and what you'll be able to do in the place that you're given. How do you know when it's good enough?
In some ways, it's never good enough.
Uh-huh.
But then that's the lot of a perfectionist, that it's never good enough, but I've decided that it's better to continually move forward than obsess and keep working backwards over and over and over, because it doesn't actually get any better. And I never actually achieve perfection in my own mind, but it's better to just keep moving forward. And then when you reflect on something, you think, actually, that was perfect at the time. But that distance and time is helpful. So knowing it's perfect is almost, for me, quite impossible. But getting 95% of the way there is great, because that means it's good enough.
Mm.
And then when I look back on it, when it's been up for a month, I'll think, actually, this wasn't 95% there. This is perfect. This is exactly what I wanted. But I think for me, it takes a little bit of time away from it and then coming back to actually think, is this right or wrong?
Mm-hmm.
And usually it is right.
Mm.
So,
and does that match up to your 365 daily practices? How do you know when that thing's good enough? Or do you just go, it's 5 minutes, I'm done?
It's not about creating perfection.
Right.
So that's very different. It's about stitching how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
So even if it's awful, that perhaps is a reflection of how I was feeling. So the fact that it came out in those few minutes is justified,
right,
no matter whether I like it or not. So there are stitchings in that book that I didn't like at the time of creation,
mm-hmm,
I don't like now, and I probably never will like,
right,
but they are as important as the stitchings that stick out to me, as I just think are perfect that there are a few stitchings at the time that I thought that is just brilliant and I love it. And looking back now, I still think that is just one of the best stitchings I've made, but it can be, it's just as justified as the ones that I still don't like because it was part of that daily practice journey.
All right. But because you're the core audience of the daily practice, that's more acceptable than putting on a show where there's lots of people having to look at it.
Yeah. But then I think it depends what the tone of the show is. If the show is about daily practice and the exhibition was showing my daily practice, all of my daily practice
warts and all,
2 years.
Yeah.
Actually, warts and all are important. Mm. And I wouldn't ever say which ones I really like and which ones I don't like. Because it's subjective.
Yeah.
And it might be that I don't like it visually. It might be that I don't like how I was feeling at the time of making it.
Sure.
So visually, people might say I really like that. Mm. But for me, there's other things going on in the piece that there's context to the piece that other people won't know.
Yeah. So when's the show on?
It opens on, I think, the 20th of September, 2025, and runs till the end of the year, I think, 20th of December, 2025.
And it is at the
Brampton Museum and Art Gallery in Newcastle-under-Lyme, Staffordshire, United Kingdom.
Excellent. No, that'll be cool. All right, I'm looking forward to it, and I'm going to... I don't know, it'll be weird, won't it? I'll go and see it, and I'll be like... Jack's hung it really badly.
Yeah, it's totally right. That piece is a bit wonky there.
Yeah, oh, no, it's all straight lines. No, that's cool. Right, so the only other part of the podcast now then, you're my first returning guest.
Yeah.
So I decided I'm going to ask you a bunch of what was the last good thing you did sort of things. So This might work, this might not work.
Probably won't, but let's give it a go.
What was the last good book you read?
The last good book I did my PhD and I read loads and then I stopped reading, and then in the last 12 months I've been reading a lot more. I'm dyslexic, so I like audiobooks. Mm. And I've gone through a lot of classics.
Okay.
And I have absolutely loved Sense and Sensibility.
Oh, really?
Yeah, really liked it.
How come?
I don't know. I was just kind of so bland and nice that it just felt a nice thing to read and listen to. Yeah, just a brilliant book. Really enjoyed it. So I'm now reading, at the minute, I'm reading Jane Eyre.
Mm-hmm.
I've done Frankenstein and Dracula and lots of these kind of classics. Mm. And some I've enjoyed and some not so enjoyed so much, but Sense and Sensibility was definitely one that I really enjoyed.
Oh, that's cool. Yeah, they do merit. I was just making me think, I think we did Jane Eyre at A-level. I haven't read it since then, but they're kind of classics for a reason,
they
right?
Are. Yeah.
Have you read To Kill a Mockingbird?
No,
oh.
I'll put that on the list.
Yeah, I enjoyed that a lot. That surprised me. I think I read that like 2 years ago and I really enjoyed that. I was quite sad when it came to the end. So,
yeah.
Okay, what was the last good film you saw?
I don't know whether it's just me, but I find film and TV at the minute quite disappointing.
Mm-hmm.
It's all kind of police, murder, dramas, and perhaps this podcast is showing that I just want nice things.
Yeah.
Something that's quite nice. So actually, I was thinking about this because I knew these questions were coming. I'm thinking, what film have I actually enjoyed? I've watched loads of TV and I've watched loads of film. And is anything stick out? Not really. The only one that does stick out, going back to the whole Jane Austen, is I watched Emma, the film that was produced a few years ago, Jane Austen novel, and I really enjoyed that.
Right.
That was a really, again, nice film.
Yeah.
So if you know any nice films, recommend them.
Yeah, I'll have to have a little think about that. I was talking to my...
Don't want crime. Don't want murder.
I was talking to my next-door neighbour the other day, and he was moaning about Vladimir Putin, bearing in mind we live in Cheshire. And I was like, there's not much you can do about that. I said, Keith, he's like 76. I was like, Keith, you should be watching Spring Watch. That's the kind of current affairs programme you need in your life. Go and watch what's going on with some owls.
Yeah.
It'll be a lot better, I swear to God. I said that to someone else as well. Yeah, I think that's probably... Sometimes that feels like that's what you need, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
And I mean, those programs, Country Fair, is like massively popular, isn't it?
It is.
It's just people going, I want to see the countryside. Yeah. Did you ever watch Detectorists?
I did, and that was absolutely acceptable.
Yeah.
I really enjoyed that.
Yeah, that was another one, wasn't it? It was like warm summer afternoons sort of thing. Yeah, sound choice that. Okay. Album, music?
Music. Albums, I wonder, this is another thing, a daily practice I tried and it didn't work. I tried to work through the top 100 albums a list to kind of listen to them all, because I feel that with streaming services now, you never actually listen. Well, I don't listen to an album. I just listen to playlists. And I think there's something about the art of an album that an artist has curated an album. Mm-hmm. So I say that I haven't really listened to albums, but what I have listened to a lot recently and I've really got into is French music, pop music, kind of like current artists who are singing in French.
Right.
I've no idea what they're saying.
Yeah.
I've no idea what the artists' names are, but I quite like the fact that I'm listening to upbeat music and I've no idea what they're saying.
Yeah, that's kind of cool.
It could be really depressing, but I quite enjoy it.
Yeah. And you're not singing along, so
I'm not distracted about what they're saying. So
yeah.
So I've enjoyed. And obviously there's music in all sorts of different languages, but French particularly. I really, really like French music.
Yeah. We went on holiday to Menorca and we hired a car and we were driving around and every now and again they'd have a Spanish song on.
Yeah.
But the girls were like, why are the songs in English? And we were having to try and explain. They were like, why don't they just record them in Spanish as well?
Yeah.
We're trying to explain like the economics of the record industry and how inefficient it is. And then every now and again you'd get a song and they'd be like, it's like quite hard to explain, but I like that. I appreciate that. And then final question then, what's one good lesson you've learned this year?
I can't think of any good lesson, but I think a good lesson.
I did totally just drop that on you.
You did totally just drop that on me. I think you can plan your life away and you can think every scenario away and actually you're better just shutting your mind off, not thinking, being present in the moment and enjoying yourself.
Yeah.
Whatever you're doing.
I like that.
Whether that's sitting in a coffee shop and having a coffee, don't think about the world. Don't think about Vladimir Putin. Just think about, is this a nice coffee? What are other people doing? What's the weather like? And just trying to appreciate what you can see.
And if you happen to make that into a daily practice,
even better.
Namaste to you.
It all comes around.
It does, doesn't it? Hey, Jack, thanks for having another Needs Exchange.